Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Tim Camisa, and he'll be answering your questions on tying your own nymphs. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Tim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it while you're watching the show and let other people know what great content we're putting out there tonight. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Tim Camisa about tying your own nymphs. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Tim, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For a drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and look for the link under tonight's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form. We'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Tim's latest book, Tying Euro Nymphs and Other Competition Favorites, courtesy of Stackpole Books. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question I ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something that Tim and I talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location using that text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, take notes, and you might be the proud new winner of Tim's latest book, Tying Euro Nymphs and Other Competition Favorites. Our guest tonight is Tim Camisa. Tim of Trout and Feather has been addicted to fly fishing and fly tying for about as long as anyone can remember. Although he and his wife Heather live in western Pennsylvania, fly fishing has taken him all over the country, with his fly fishing home base being the State College area. Some of Tim's favorite waters include the mighty Delaware, where he is guided, and Missouri rivers, though discovering small streams with wild trout continues to excite him. His 9-year-old son, Angelo, especially likes this, and he has also caught the fly fishing bug. Tim is one of the new generations of fly fishers who have taken to social media to promote and teach the sport. A fly fisherman and fly tier for 30 years, Tim started making fly tying tutorials and posting them on YouTube, which permits users to upload their own homemade videos on just about any topic. Tim and his coffee mug co-starred in over 300 videos on many different fly fishing and tying topics, like purchasing and maintaining gear, tying with certain materials or a specific fly pattern, and giving back to charities such as Project Healing Waters. Tim has had a great response to his videos. He now has an audience of over 25,000 subscribers and 3 million video views. You can view Tim in person at tying events such as the International Fly Tying Symposium and the Fly Fishing Show in Edison, New Jersey, and Denver, Colorado. You can view Tim's fly tying and fishing videos on his website at troutandfeather.com. Again, troutandfeather.com. Tim, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks, Roger. It's great to be back and talking with you. Though I think I need to work on that bio. I think I need to make it like half as short. So if any of your listeners want to rewrite that for me, make it, put that in ChatGPT. Make that shorter for me.
Yeah, that one's not too bad. I have a space in my script for the bio, and if a guest bio exceeds that space, things get cut. So, but yours didn't.
As
Yours fit. In fact, I had a couple extra lines,
I'll
but
work on
no.
it for the next show, I promise. I'll work on
Yeah,
it.
yeah, yeah. I'm sure you've got more listeners than I said now, and or subscribers, and have done a lot more videos too. But
Yeah, it's
anyway,
all good.
yeah, we are where we are, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So let's get started. You just published your latest book, as I've said, Tying Your Own Nymphs and Other Competition Favorites. So tell us how this book came about and what it's all about.
Yeah, you got it. Listen, it's been very exciting publishing this book. This is my second fly fishing book. And my first one was met, I got a couple awards for it. I did really well with it. I got a lot of great feedback with it. And I was kind of like, I was very happy. I was like, wow, this was really a great experience writing a book. And I just kind of said, all right, well, if I get an idea for another one, I'll see if my publisher thinks that it's something that will work. So the long story short is that, a good friend of mine from this area, from the Pennsylvania area, his name's Josh Miller. And Josh was writing a book on Euronymphing. And Euronymphing is something I've jumped down that rabbit hole, I don't know how many years ago. And it's just, I look at it as another arrow in my quiver of fly fishing techniques, but it's a highly effective one. So kind of knowing that and knowing my friend was writing this book on it, he called me and he asked if I would, tie a couple flies and take some images for his book, and which it was an honor to be asked. And I said to him, well, how much emphasis are you placing on the flies? And he said, well, this is really a technique book. And so I'm sharing some flies, but I'm really not going in depth. So I thought, well, this could be a nice opportunity to write a book on, the flies of Euronymphing, but not just nymphs, but also dry flies and streamers and the junk flies and all that fun stuff. So I thought this could be a cool opportunity. So I called my publisher. His name's Jay Nichols. He's working with Stackpole. And I kind of just talked about my idea. And he listened to my idea. This is a sign of a really good publisher. And he was like, all right, that's okay, but let me see if I can make it a little better. And so he tweaked it a little bit, and he started talking and just brainstorming on our call. And at the very end, he basically went from me writing this book about, European nymphs and other flies to me going out and interviewing some of the top fly fishers and fly tiers from around the world, and then compiling all that information, selecting flies from all that information, taking all of their thoughts, their ideas, their experiences, including my own, and then generating a book on it that's not just flies, but also variations, confidence lists, fishing suggestions, and just, some all around, guidance on tactics, tips and techniques with Euronymphing. So after he was finished talking, I thought to myself, well, he just like tripled the amount of time it's going to take to write this book. But it was a really smart idea. And that's kind of the framework that I worked with to put this one in motion.
Well, and I suppose you got to chat with a bunch of friends and that you made a bunch of new friends in the process of interviewing all these people, right?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's like a who's who of fly fishing today. And I mean, you and I are very lucky because we both have, some type of media where we get to talk to the insiders in fly fishing. And by the way, I'm sure your listeners, this is no surprise to them. I love your show. I listen to it. I'm one of the junkies that goes on your website, downloads the old episodes. So like I really appreciate that, knowing that, you can subscribe and have access to that library. So whenever I start this project, I'm like, well, I need to, pick out a few of these, the names that everyone knows, the people like the Devin Olsons, the Howard Crostons of the world, the Lubos Rosa from Czech Republic, those individuals, Lance Egan. And whenever I would ask them, like, hey, are you interested in doing this? It was immediate. The answer was yes. Like, Devin was the first person. It wasn't even a hesitation. He's like, whatever you need. We finished a Zoom call, and I had access to these people. It wasn't just do a 1 hour Zoom and that's it. It's follow-up emails and text messages and DMs on Instagram and just clarification as to their thoughts and what they said. And each one of these recordings, which I did promise them I would never release these recordings, but I recorded everybody, which they knew because that was my, I had to watch them all back whenever I generated all the content. And just listening to these, it's like a peek inside of a secret world. That's what it felt like. I was like that kid in the candy shop listening to Lance Egan as he just taught a master class on Euronymphing, and I was just there kind of helping to guide that roller coaster. So
Yeah.
yeah, it was awesome. That was a really cool experience to be on the inside.
Yeah, it's really interesting, like before the show when you and I were talking and I said, "Oh gosh, it's been for me 14, I guess it's in next month be 18 years I've been doing this
Yeah.
show. And unfortunately, there's been quite a few people that I interviewed that have passed on. And
Yeah.
so having their voice and, you know, recorded and available out there is, I think, just, you know, it's incredible to have that. Because years ago, we didn't have that, you know, and nowadays
Oh,
we have a record of these really well-known fly fishers, you know, and it's sad, but, you know, that's just part of life. And but it is nice to be able to look back and listen to those. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. Your own thing, you know, that's been around since almost when I started this show, I think in 2006 or 2007. I interviewed maybe Jeff Currier or something on Euro nymphing. But back then we were talking Czech nymphing, Spanish nymphing, French nymphing. So what is Euro nymphing today? Is it all the above or is it something new?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, first of all, for your listeners, to give a little background, the book is called like Other Competition Favorites. And I did interview a ton of competition anglers, though I have to be upfront. Like that's not something that I participate in. I'm not a competition angler, nor am I a competition fly tier. So let's kind of preface it with, I wrote this looking at it from through the lens of the everyday anglers. Let's also preface it with that, the everyday fly tier. But I also wanted to know, what are these, the top of the top? What are the 1% doing? Like what's separating them and why are they so good at this? So that was the lens I looked through. And it's interesting because now looking back over the last, like you're saying, the last 15 years, I remember whenever we first heard about this Czech nymphing where it was these really heavy flies, short leaders, dredging the bottom. And then we heard more about, you know, the French nymphing style where these real long leaders and light nymphs. And now, you know, from talking to these competitors, it seems like, you know, we look at this as all those styles are starting to meld into one. And what's really starting to emerge out of this is kind of this idea of long rods, light lines, and light flies. There's situations for dry dropper. There's situations for jig streamers. There's situations for that standard nymph. But from my conversations, it's almost like a race to see who can have the lightest leader with the lightest fly. And then now that they're being very intentional in the hook that they're selecting with that and the rod that they're selecting with that. So that entire rig kind of melds together for, you know, the ultimate in, you know, drag resistance for keeping your fly in a certain drift. I mean, that's what they're going for. So it seems like for these competition anglers, you know, who are pushing the boundaries of Euro nymphing, you know, I'll give you an example of this. When I interviewed some of the anglers, a lot of the anglers were from Europe and some other countries like New Zealand, Czech Republic, you know, Eastern Europe. And there was a little bit of, you know, communication issue with translation. And at one point I was, you know, emailing someone back and forth about their leaders and their tippet. And, you know, I was asking, what's your leader look like right now? And everyone was very free with their leader formulas. You know, it's almost like a big mystery in fly fishing at times with leader formulas. But these anglers were incredible. And, you know, he replied back that, you know, his leader was something like, I forget how the measurements came out, but whenever I put the measurements in, it was like 5.5 or 6X, something like that, Roger. And I'm like, oh, there must be something misinterpreting. So I said, hey, I'm not talking about the tippet, the part that connects to the fly. You know, I'm trying to be very rudimentary. I'm like, no, I'm talking about the leader. And he's like, Tim, that is my leader. You know, 18 or 15 foot of 5.5X connected to 7 or 8X. I'm thinking about that. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that just blows my mind. But then when you take a step back, like this is also, that's a competition angler who maybe fishes in a country like Spain where maybe it's a numbers game. They have to have a very delicate and light presentation. And they're interested in catching a lot of fish in a short amount of time versus somebody who's over in New Zealand. Like that angler, no, he's not using a straight 5.5X leader. He might be using a straight leader, but it may be more like 3X or 3.5X for his straight leader because he's fishing for larger trout there. So, you know, there's also that component, and I was trying to be very clear in the book whenever I talked about each individual and their leaders and their style to say that it's not just this is a one-size-fits-all approach. It's never been that way in fly fishing. I wish it was. But it's really, you have to really start with where are you fishing, what species are you trying to target, and then kind of work everything backwards from that point.
Yeah, it's because I remember seeing some film clips and stuff in Spain and most of the, and people writing about it, the competitors writing about fishing there, and it seemed like it was all like skinny water over there and a lot of heat, and they weren't fishing for 20-inch trout over there. They were catching 9-inch, but a bunch of them was the point, right?
That makes
a lot of sense.
Let me elaborate too, because what was neat about this, not everybody looked at that and said like, hey, I'm going as light as I can go. Like there were some people like, you know, for instance, Lance Egan, you know, he's an angler from the United States. He's out west right now. And he acknowledged that if you go to 5X or 6X, there are going to be a lot of advantages for that. But then he also kind of took a step back and he said, for someone who wants to start with something like a 12-pound test leader, and then for them to go down to 4X, to make that jump from 12-pound to 4X, he sees a noticeable difference in the sag. But then to jump from, you know, 4X to 5X, it's really incremental. There's really, in his mind, it's really just a very, very slight difference. And he looks at it as, all right, I can go down to 4X for my entire leader and be very comfortable. But if I go down to 5X or 6X for my leader, and I just get a little nick in that leader, and the fish pops off, I have to tie a brand new leader that's 15 foot long or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, it's nice whenever you hear some of these people that we look up to say, you know, there's different paths you can take in this game, and you have to really just, you know, think about the path that you want to take and which one's best for you.
Yeah, and when you start talking competition, to tie a new leader on and so forth takes time, which cuts into your fishing time, which, you know, So it makes a difference as to whether it's competitive or not as well, for sure. Well, you know, this thing has evolved. Euro nymphing rods have evolved because I think initially everybody was just using whatever they had. What has happened? How have they evolved? And what do you look for in a Euro nymphing rod today?
Yeah, you're right. They sure have. I mean, if I was going to tell, you know, someone that's out there, hey, if you're looking for your first Euro nymphing rod, what's like a base rod? I mean, the all-round rod that kind of still defines Euro nymphing is something like a 10-foot, 6-inch, 3-weight. So let's just preface it with that's kind of that general rod. That's like the 9-foot, 5-weight of Euro nymphing, if you think of it that way. But what are we looking for? We're looking for something that has a relatively flexible or soft tip, because now let's go back to that conversation we had about light leaders and light tippets. If you have a soft tip, it's going to be able to protect your tippet. So we're looking for something like that. So whenever you get to a, you know, a fly shop or whatever store you're buying it, you know, everyone wants to walk up and do the wiggle test. And that wiggle test does matter. I mean, we're also looking for a rod that's relatively responsive. The term that you'll hear people use is, does it have a fast recovery? Which means as you wiggle it, you stop. Does it stop wiggling faster, or does it, you know, have a little bit more wave action? Something else that I consider is you want it to be lightweight. So we're looking for rods that if you are fishing a rod that's 10 foot, 10 and a half, up to the 11 foot range, I mean, holding a rod at that length, you know, it's going to be heavy. It's going to be cumbersome. It's going to, you know, cause some pains in your rod arm. So, you know, for me to say to people like, hey, this is your ideal rod, it's somewhere on that 10 and a half, but that's at least what I start with. I think what's really been interesting, at least in the last 10 years or 15 years, it's been really neat to see manufacturers really catch up with the Euro nymphing game in a very short amount of time. I mean, it went from, I don't know, I remember my first, what I called my Euro nymphing rod. I had a 9-foot 3-weight. It was a pretty responsive little rod. It was kind of like a dry fly rod. And I fished that rod with a, you know, a generic Euro nymph leader for an entire season. And Roger, it was great. I felt like everything was wonderful with that rod if I was fishing small to medium sized streams. Once I got to some bigger water and I just wanted to carry a little bit more line, not carry, but just have a little bit more line out, I just felt having 9 foot was kind of limiting me. So then I made that jump to a 10-foot rod. And then I made the jump from a 10-foot to an 11-foot rod. Then I realized, you know what, 11-foot's probably, you know, it's a little bit longer than I want. I've kind of backed off since. So I kind of live in between that kind of 10-foot and around 10-foot, 9-inch range. I have a number of different rods in there. But as you kind of look towards like the future, you know, I was testing some prototype fly rods this summer. I think they were by Honic Competition. And at one point I said to their owner, his name's Franta Honic, you know, he had this rod. He wanted me to cast it and fish with it. It was a wonderful rod. And he asked for some feedback. And I said, well, it'd be nice if you could make this rod like that green color of your Superb rod. He has another rod that has this beautiful green. And he's like, oh, we don't want to do that. We want to keep it this rough material that you wouldn't sand off. You just leave it like this after production because there's so many anglers that are now using light leaders that, you know, when they wrap around that rod and it's slick, they'll stick to it. So whenever it has these rough edges, they won't, that light tippet won't adhere to the rod so much anymore. So here you have like manufacturers who are truly like talking to the anglers on the river and hearing, like, all right, well, Tim may want it in the color green, but here's why we're going to leave it this rough, unsanded blank, in a sense, because it's going to perform better in the water. And, you know, the other kind of beauty of these rods is you have them at all kinds of different price tiers. I mean, you can start off with a relatively a decent rod right around that $200 level, and then they roll the whole way up to, you know, you get to the $1,000, a little bit above, you know, $1,000 rods. I mean, there's rods up there that are super high-performance rods that are just incredible sticks. You know, there's a rod that I fished. It's called a Master Nymph rod. It is wonderful. It's awesome. And it's nice to know, like, it doesn't matter what price point you're at, you'll find a rod there. For somebody who's just jumping into it, they may even want to look on something like Facebook Marketplace or eBay just to see what's out there in the used market, because a lot of anglers jumped into Euro nymphing during the pandemic and just, you know, it just wasn't for them. Or some people just kind of got out of fly fishing. So it's always nice to look in that marketplace as well.
Yeah, the when you said that rough surface on the rod, it reminded me, and a lot of people, this might be before their time, but there was a really great fly tire fisherman named Gary LaFontaine. And I remember him talking about sanding down his rods. So I can't remember what kind of rods he, but it was like, you know, Winston or a Sage, and he would take sandpaper and sand them down so there wasn't any glare on them. And people were like, oh, you're sanding down that expensive rod, you know? And he goes, yeah, well, I'm trying to catch fish, you know? It's like,
Roger, one of my good friends, John Dunn, he had this beautiful bamboo rod from, oh, I'm going to blank on the rod, the maker's name from Ohio, Jeff something. But he had this beautiful bamboo rod. He had it custom built. And after he fished it for a month, he said, I don't like how it's balanced. And he epoxied a bunch of quarters or 50-cent pieces on the end. And the rod builder saw it and, like, I thought he was going to have a heart attack. He's like, what did you do to my rod? And John, it was the same thing. He's like, it doesn't balance. Well, I wanted to balance it out a little better to help me catch more fish. And they're tools at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, it's time to take a quick break here, Tim, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about rods and other things like line and tippets and leaders. So hang tight, everybody, and we'll be right back. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com, or you can call them at 866-845-9284. Again, the uglybugflyshop.com, or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Tim Camisa about tying Euro nymphs. If you'd like to ask Tim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. So, Tim, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? And I know publishing this book was one big event for you, for sure. So share with us what's happening.
Yeah, well, aside from the book, which, by the way, for any of your listeners that have bought it, thank you. It's been super exciting. You know, for those who are listening to this podcast after the fact, it was released mid-January 2025. It was sold out. The first printing's completely sold out before the release date, which doesn't happen very often in fly fishing. So that was like, and it's a fly tying book as well. So it's a pattern book, fly fishing, fly tying, patterns, a little bit of everything. So for that to sell out so early, I truly just want to thank the fly fishing community. Thank you so much. And for those people who are going to my website now to buy them, you know, the next printing's underway like today. And I should have the books in the next week and a half or so. So for anyone who orders them, I'll get them out as soon as you can. I mean, Amazon even pulled the Buy It Now link because they sold out as well. So it was just, it completely blew me away. Moving forward into kind of the winter and summer for the season, I mean, the next big thing that's kind of on my planner, aside from my day job, which I always like to throw out for people who don't know, I'm an elementary school teacher. I teach sixth grade social studies and science. So that's my day job. So, you know, whenever I have my free time, I carve out, you know, in between teaching. I'm definitely love to kind of interact with people at the fly fishing show. And I'll be a featured presenter at the Denver show, at the Edison show in New Jersey, and at the Lancaster show in Pennsylvania. I have a number of club events I'll be speaking at this season. And I'm also invited back to the Midwest Fly Fishing Expo in Michigan. So I'm super excited to participate and be a featured presenter at those shows. So for anyone who's going to be at those shows, you know, please, you know, find me, stop me, and say hi. You know, it's always great to have conversations with everybody. And then moving forward into the spring, I really try not to do anything I really just dedicate that time with my family. So we fish a lot together. We fish the first day of trout season in Pennsylvania together as a family. We get a little Airbnb and a house on a stream, and, you know, we'll fish together. My wife, Heather, she's an exceptional fly fisher. So it's so cool to know that, you know, she does this with me. And then our children, they're just along for the ride. They kind of net the fish for us, but they'll fish as well. And they have a great time trying their best to scare every trout in that river. And then, you know, moving into the summer, you had mentioned my YouTube channel. There's been a push for my own sake, and this is kind of going back to what you had said, to recording the voices of fly fishing. And I've been doing my best to kind of navigate my YouTube channel where, you know, I have kind of three series of things going on right now. I'm in the midst of releasing new fly tying tutorials. So that's something I hadn't done for a while. While I was writing my last couple books, I kind of reduced the number of fly tying I did on the channel. But now I'm coming out with a lot of new content with fly tying. So I'll record a lot of that stuff either in December or in early June. The second thing that I do is just a lot of, you know, fly fishing instruction and tutorials and lists of things to help improve your fly fishing and make you a better angler. And then the third is just recording the voices of fly fishing. And, you know, over the last few seasons, I just carve time out and I say to these are people that I want to feature on my channel, and I go and I get them. People like Tom Rosenbauer, Joe Humphreys. This summer I recorded Tom Baltz from Central Pennsylvania. He's been guiding for 50 years. I mean, people like that. So I'm really trying my best to say, all right, this is summer 2025. Here's my list of the three people that I absolutely have to record, because you got to get their voices down. And we have a great opportunity to get some more video and some audio with these anglers that have influenced so many of us. So that's kind of my mission. And then once that's done, kind of the last part of my summer is dedicated towards fly fishing trips. I've been fortunate. I've had many opportunities to travel around the country and travel around the world fly fishing, and there's a few places that have really resonated with me. So I've dedicated more and more trips to those places. Right now, you know, specifically Iceland and Alaska. So I'll take parties fly fishing there. I shouldn't say parties. You can call them group trips or hosted trips, however you want to, you know, you want to phrase it. But, you know, by the end of that week, we're family. I mean, you know each other, you're friends, you know, you'll text for the rest of our lives. You have those experiences. So I've been fortunate to find some really good outfitters in those places, bring groups there. I think I have three trips that are running this summer. The first one of my Iceland trips is sold out. I think the Alaska trip has a couple spots, and my second Iceland trip has a few spots as well. So for anyone who's thinking about taking a trip there, don't wait, do it. I mean, I waited for a while for my first Iceland trip, and then I've been going two or three times a year, you know, sometimes just, you know, with Heather, just to spend more time there. It's like our home away from home. So for anyone who's listening, who's like, I've never thought about that. Like, you are officially invited. Like, even if you don't come with me, send me an email and I'll help you plan your trip. It's a great place.
Well, I noticed that you put on page 8 of your book, you put a picture of a, you know, it looks like a small brown trout there that you caught in Iceland. I don't know. It doesn't look too big. But I'm just kidding.
That was a beautiful fish. That was a special fish. Yeah, that was. I thought I was going to fall in the river when I was chasing that one. Yeah, that was a special brown trout. You know, it's a special one when you get back. You know, everyone wants to show everyone their pictures, and I don't always like to show all the, you know, the people who are on my trips the pictures, because, you know, if you're having a really good day and someone's not, I don't want to be that person to rub it in their face. Well, that fish, I showed it to the owner of the lodge, and, you know, the owner of the lodges, they've seen a lot of fish. So I don't want to say a fish is a fish to them, but a fish is a fish to them. And he saw the fish and he was like, oh my God. He's like, that doesn't happen. That fish is not known to be in those waters.
Well, you know, what's funny is as I look at it more carefully, I'm looking at the eye and the mouth and the face on the fish. Yeah. And it's like, he's saying, damn it. I lost that one.
He was not, you know, happy. Like, I mean,
you know, he's pissed off.
No, if you're looking at it, if you look at the jaw, and by the way, for everyone listening, just, it's a picture of a beautiful brown trout. I'm in a little micro canyon, a rock canyon with like rock walls around me, beautiful green color water, blue sky. That's one of the rivers we're fishing this summer. And the fish, if I wish I would have done a better job getting more pictures of its mouth, because if you look at it straight on, Roger, that lower jaw, that kite, was actually angled hard to the left. So if you really look at the picture, you'll see the jaw is almost out of focus just because the rest of the fish is in focus, but its jaw was kind of moved back. It was a gnarly jaw, and that fish was mad at me the whole time. He was mad the whole time.
Yeah, I bet. You didn't make his day, but he sure made your day.
He made my year. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Well, thanks for sharing all that. And
Sure.
we did have a, going back to rods, one more question on rods. Gary Kaufman in North Carolina wrote in and said, is it possible to use standard fly rods to Euronymph? If so, what modifications would we Luddites need to do? Thanks for all of your highly informative videos.
Yeah, Gary, great question. I mean, the short answer is yes. I mean, I would say if it's around a 9 foot and it falls between that 2 to 4 weight, the short answer is 100% you can. Once you start getting into 5 and 6 weight rods, I mean, based on some of those characteristics that I was saying with that, you know, soft tip, you want a fast recovery rod, you want it to be lightweight, you know, you might move away from some of those characteristics that you're shooting for. But without a doubt, I mean, I said very clearly, my first rod was a 9 foot 3 weight. That was that rod that I fished the whole season. And the only reason I made my first upgrade was the notion that I just felt like I needed a little bit more reach. But yeah, I mean, the short answer is yes. I mean, go with that, go with a rod, go with whatever you have. You may want to start with a leader that's probably more of a standard leader. And I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about some leaders today, but
yeah,
you can buy a lot of like standard, if they'll be called like a Euro nymphing leader, something along those lines, that it might just be a 15 or 20 foot leader that goes to a tippet ring, and then you can tie some tippet onto it. But you can absolutely start with something like that, or even like a mono rig that you build yourself. So yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Moving on to line, how is the line for Euro nymphing different than what we use for other nymphing that we do?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, whenever I think about the Euronymph fly lines, think of it this way. Like when we're thinking about fly fishing with a traditional setup, we typically have a weight forward line that has a significant taper to it. And depending on how that taper is designed and where that taper is and how long it is, that's what impacts, you know, how far you can cast, you know, the turnover, like the weight of the flies. There's so many things that are impacted by that taper. With Euronymphing, it's almost like throw that away. With the fly lines, if you have a dedicated Euronymphing fly line, we're talking something that would be a level taper. The two most typical cores would be either a mono core or a braid core. And then the most important part is these are very fine diameters. So you can almost call them ultra fine diameters. And if you look at the packaging on some of these boxes, like an SA line or a Cortland line, it will say like ultra fine diameter. A lot of the diameters will go to this one set number, and that's based on something called like the FIPS regulation. And FIPS is the governing body for these fly fishing competitions. But again, I'm not a competitive angler. So for a while, those were the only dedicated Euronymph lines that you could buy that would go down to that specification for their diameter. After a while, some manufacturers said, all right, we can actually make smaller diameters than that just so it's a little bit less of a diameter. So it can kind of give you a little bit more reach when you're fishing and have less sag on it. Because if you think about the notion of nymphing, let's just say you're going to do something like high stick nymphing, and you know, you have your fly out there and you hold your rod up in the air, there's a lot of sag when your fly line's coming out of your tip top guide, when your leader's going into the water, you have this tapered leader that goes down to a fly, and if you try to hold it there, what will, you know, just naturally happen, that fly line, that heavy fly line, will almost pull your fly across those currents back towards you. So that's kind of what happens. So, you know, how do we balance that out? And we make our flies heavier, we put split shot on the end, or we can run strike indicators. I mean, those are a few of the strategies we have to kind of fix that problem. But one that, you know, we look at it from that Euronymphing perspective is to say, well, if we have this heavy fly line, why don't we just reduce the weight and make it a fine diameter, which means less weight. So that's kind of the idea behind a lot of these lines. Though I'll tell you, whenever you look at a lot of these high-end anglers, very little fly line will come off of their reels. They're almost fishing nearly just straight leader off the reel, depending on the rules of that competition. But for many of the anglers that I talk to who aren't competitive anglers, or at least aren't anymore, people like Josh Millers, the George Daniels of the world, they're fishing these longer leaders that could be 20, 25, 30 feet long. So they're fishing just a complete monofilament leader that, and their fly lines really never seeing the light of day, or just very rarely. Now, for some people, you know, like my wife, when she got into it, I had to make a decision. When she got into fly fishing, do I want her to jump into Euronymphing or go into a traditional rig and learn how to cast? And I went with the former because that's how I was fishing at the time. I was Euronymphing. And I first started her off with some type of a straight mono rig. And I thought that would be good for her because you have a little bit of feel through that. You know, you can kind of sense some stuff through that monofilament. It costs less money. You don't have to buy a dedicated fly line. So I thought, well, let's start here. And she didn't like that. She didn't like the feel of the monofilament. So I then got her, you know, a dedicated European nymph line, got her that. And she liked the feel of the fly line on her hands. Then, you know, she's kind of developed her skills, you know, with this fly fishing technique. She's not, kind of got to the point where she kept seeing me catch a lot more fish than her. And she was like, all right, what are you doing differently than me? Because we're using the same fly. We're fishing the same waters. And I was like, well, I'm able to get some better drifts. And here's one of the reasons why. And then she just started kind of dropping her leader size gradually to the point now where she doesn't use a fly line anymore, a Euronymph fly line.
Okay, yeah. And well, like you say, you have little, if any, fly line of the rod in many cases until you hook a fish maybe, right? You know, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What about the reel? How does that play into the whole setup?
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to the rod. We said it was a 10 to an 11 foot rod. So if we have a rod that's of that length, we want to have a reel that's going to balance that out. So whenever I think about some of the reels, we want to go with a reel that's kind of slightly heavier than your whatever your X reel is for that rod. So whatever I was fishing with my 9 foot three weight years ago, I was using a 5 weight reel, you know, one that would be typically paired with a 5 weight rod, and it was oversized just because it would give me a little bit more weight to help balance things out. But I don't think I needed it for my 9 foot rod. Then as I got to a 10-foot rod and an 11-foot rod, I definitely needed something like a 5-weight reel. Now, if I said to you, what's a dedicated Euronymphing reel look like? It doesn't have to be a dedicated Euronymphing reel. I mean, there's a brand that I love called Lampson. I'm sure your listeners know about them. They're awesome reels. They have a full cage, and a full cage is really nice because by having that full cage, it's less likely that your leader, your fine leader material, is going to slip through that. But if you don't have a full cage, it's a little bit more possible for it to happen. I've also been looking, and I say to myself, all right, what else do I want? Do you want something that's a top-of-the-line drag system? Like, more than likely, you don't need that. You just want something that's an adequate drag or something that sounds nice to you because, I mean, at the end of the day, for 95% of these fish that we're catching, they're probably not going to get on the reel. You're not going to need a drag to help land them. So your reel is just there to hold line. So I always tell people, you know, unless you want to spend the money on a reel, I wouldn't overthink that process. I mean, I love a pretty reel. I love the aesthetics on them. There are some reels that I look at and I'm just like, that's a beautiful reel. That would look great on this rod. And I go in that direction because, you know, I'm all in with fly fishing. But if I'm telling your listeners, like, yeah, should you buy a Euro-specific reel? Like, they might want to do that if there's someone who's really dedicated into this European nymphing. And by a dedicated Euro reel, there's reels now, Roger, that have weights that come with them. Like there's different weights that you can put in. You can actually, I have a Lampson reel. It's a brand new Euronymphing reel that you remove the spool and it comes with this little container. It looks like a prescription bottle and there's a few different sizes of weights in there. And you put the weight in, you put it around the arbor, then you put your spool back on and then you put it on your rod and see if it balances. And if it doesn't, you put on a heavier or a lighter one. So, you know, this goes back to my friend John when he was epoxying quarters onto the back of his bamboo rod. And you want to find a reel that will balance that rod. And, you know, looking at some of these rods, and the majority of these Euronymphing rods, they have a downlocking reel seat. And for your listeners who don't know what that means, it's when you go to attach your fly reel onto your fly reel will either push up into the cork or push down towards the butt. And the majority of these Euronymphing rods, they push down towards the butt. They have that downlocking reel seat, again, to kind of help balance them at that tip end, because if you have a 10.5-foot rod, I mean, that's a longer stick, so your reel is going to help to balance that out. So in short, like full cage, do you want a weight system or not? And you want something that has at least an adequate enough drag to kind of, you know, for the species that you're chasing anyway.
Yeah. Time to take another break, Tim. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about line, and then we're jumping into flies. So hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back. Discover the power of pure Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead, trout, or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit pureskagit.com or call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's pureskagit.com, or call them at 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Tim Camisa about tying Euro nymphs. If you'd like to ask Tim a question, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com, fill out that form, and we'll try to get your question answered. Let me see. We did have a couple. Some of these are going to wait till we talk about flies. Mm-hmm. But Phil McCartney in Kentucky wrote in, he says, elementary school teachers deserve to catch great fish.
Thanks, Phil.
He must have a soft spot for elementary
my
school.
My favorite listener today.
Yeah.
And by the way, while you're looking, the one thing I think I forgot to mention with fly reels, large arbor as well. Having a large arbor just helps for faster line retrieval, prevents your line from coiling within the spool. So one little thing I better mention too.
Always a good idea, I think. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about leaders and tippets. Can you educate us on what the options are? You know, some of the, and, you know, what some of the pros are using, because like you said, they have their own little secret setup, but maybe you can share a bit of that.
Yeah, well, first of all, listen, if there's someone out there who's interested in writing a book, write a book on the leaders of fly fishing, because I think that could fill multiple volumes. Every single angler I talked to had their own, like, formula, had their own thought process. I mean, first of all, if we say to ourselves, what are we trying to achieve with the leader? Like, that's really what this is coming down to. We're trying to achieve and have some type of a leader that's going to allow for this drift, you know, with this, and it's going to turn over, if you want to say that, turn over or be able to throw this fly and hopefully catch this fish, you know, and throw in a weight there or a size. So you do have a few different things that you're trying to accomplish with the leaders that are out there today. When I was talking to today's top anglers, the competition anglers, there is definitely a race to see that who can get, you know, the lightest leader, the lightest tippet, and the lightest flies, and to have that kind of all working in sync. Though if I said to you, like, hey, for the people that are out there, they're saying, I want to get into this, I'm thinking about where do I start with my leader, I'm going to tell them to buy something like, to go online, go to their fly shop, and buy like a Scientific Angler's Absolute Euro Nymph Leader. You know, something simple like that, something that's a 15-foot leader, it's got a taper to it, tapers down to around 4X, 2X or 4X, something like that, just to start with a base leader. By having something that's going to have a little bit of a taper, it'll be easier to cast, because saying 15 foot, like, that's just your leader. That's not adding your tippet on. But if you have a tapered leader, it's going to transfer that energy, you know, from your line down into your leader, turn over your flies, whatever nymphs you're throwing to start off with, and kind of get you in the game with European nymphing. As I've kind of progressed through my own journey of Euro nymphing, I started with a very similar leader to that. And then I said to myself, well, I want to get a lighter leader. So what do I do next? Kind of, I just kept like ramping down. And I'm somebody that I buy leader material. I buy all the different cider materials and that type of stuff. And I wanted to develop my own formula too, because I wanted to balance it with my rod and kind of figure out all that fun stuff. So whenever I think about like a prototypical, like the next leader, I mean, I say to myself, I'm just going to drop everything down by maybe 5 pounds or 10 pounds at every level that I can, as I'm building this leader, and I'm going to have something like a 12-foot, 13-foot leader, and then I'm going to attach something that they call cider material to the end of the leader, something that's like a high-vis color. There's some that they're dedicated cider materials that are marketed as, you know, high-vis cider material in like chartreuse or, you know, a high-vis orange or fluorescent orange or something along those lines. So we have our leader, we have our cider material, and then typically, you know, at least kind of where it started in this whole progression, people would add on a tippet ring to the end of their cider. And the tippet ring is nice because by putting on a tippet ring, you never have to cut back into your cider material or your main leader. And then from that point, from your tippet ring, you're just adding on, you know, one piece of tippet. Because I typically recommend that people start with just a solo nymph, just one nymph when they're getting into this. And, you know, the biggest question I get is, how long should that piece of tippet be? And I tend to recommend, you know, figure out whatever the water depth is you're going to be fishing and add 2 feet to it. So if you're going to be fishing 3 feet of water, make that tippet 5 feet. Because that way you know that anytime you're holding your cider above water, because that's where it's going to be held, when you're holding your cider material above water, you know, your tip is going to be the only thing penetrating that water and going in. And by keeping a really fine tippet material, something like 4X, 5X, or 6X, or smaller, having that go through the water column, there's just going to be less resistance on it as, you know, those currents are pushing at that, trying to create drag with your system. Now, you ask kind of like, you know, what's the next iteration from that? Because, you know, I started with that, a heavier Euroliter, then I went to kind of the next stage, and now we're starting to see things like, they're calling them microliters or thin liters or like super micro thin liters. I mean, kind of a liter that I fish right now. I mean, imagine something like this on my reel. If you went right now and you looked at one of my Euro Nymph setups, this is exactly what you would find. There would be 15 foot of 3X, 15 foot of 4.5X, and those two are connected with like a blood knot. At the end of the 4.5X, I would probably have either a tippet ring, a micro perfection loop, or a blood knot, just something like that. And then I connect my tippet, which is, you know, I live in Pennsylvania, so I'm fishing somewhere between 5X to 7.5X. And then that tippet's going to be about 2 feet longer than whatever water I'm fishing. So that my leader's around a 4.5X. I love this material. It's called Sempe, Fluoro Sempe. Really neat stuff. Comes in some neat colors like rose. And by the way, this leader formula and all the ones I'm talking about, they're all in the book. So for anyone who's like, you know, they're into leader formulas, I try to put as many leaders that I could in this book. And then, you know, as I started picking the brains of some of these, you know, these top tier people, I mean, we get people like Lance Egan, who's like, all right, he wants it a little bit finer. He wants around a 4X leader. So that's kind of where he was. He's kind of living in that 4X world where his entire leader is a straight 4X. So he has 15 to 30 feet of 4X, depending on if he's in the competition. Then I talked to some people from France, like this one individual, very high-end angler. His name is Gregory Juglaret. He's on the French team. They always perform very well at the World Fly Fishing Championships. I believe he may have gotten a medal this year, and I think France won, actually. I mean, they're just, you could never get anyone from France to talk, and Greg did. He didn't give me a ton of information, but he gave me some. And he came out right out, and he said his leader is a straight 5X fluorocarbon leader if he's using a three-weight fly rod. But then he said, well, if he fishes heavy, this is heavy, Roger, it's a 4X fluorocarbon with a 3 or a 4-weight rod. And then he's like, on days that I'm fishing very light, then he goes with 4.5X nylon with a 2 or 3-weight rod. So you can see how even like these top-tier anglers, they're very intentional with matching the leaders with their rods based on, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. But, you know, for that everyday angler, I don't think they have to get down to that granular level. They can kind of just dial it back and just say, hey, let's just go with 30 feet of 3X or, you know, something like that to start kind of at that line for those who have kind of made the progression. Because I think starting with a level leader and just jumping right down at that pace can be a little difficult. I feel like starting with that tapered Euro leader is a little bit of a better place to start, and then gradually just work down until you find your comfort zone.
Yeah. Jerry Sherman in Lexington, Kentucky was asking about one formula that works well, but I think you've answered his question. If not, Jerry, you can write in and want clarification, but I think Tim just covered it rather well. Which brings us to, before we talk to flies, and we better move through this quick, and I don't think it'll take long, so we can talk about flies, is casting, you know? I mean, this is we're not doing the kind of casting we were used to with dry dropper rigs and dry flies and so forth. So what do we need to know about casting?
No, I mean, there's really just a couple things that I would kind of preface. Whenever I first learned Euro Nymphing, the typical cast is something like a water load, where you would let your flies, your leader, everything go almost straight downstream from you and have your rod tip pointed downstream at them, kind of keep it at a low angle. And then just kind of imagine that you're just going to turn your wrist a little bit, lift the rod, and kind of shoot or flick it all back upstream in the opposite direction, basically the 180-degree rule. So, you know, wherever your flies are pointing in that first direction, you want to cast them in the opposite direction. But you use that water to help load everything because it's not as easy to cast a 15-foot leader as it is, you know, a 9-foot leader with a traditional fly line. And the first time I fished a rig like this, I think I was borrowing my friend Josh Miller's rod, and I remember just casting it, and I thought it felt like a piece of spaghetti. I was like, what is wrong with this rod? Like, what's wrong with this? There were so many things that was wrong with it. It was the rod. It was the leader. And I didn't know how to cast that setup at the time. So I tell people, let's start with something like a water load where you're using that resistance of the water to help kind of load your rod and spring your flies in the direction you want them. Over time, you will learn how to cast them in the air with like an overhead cast. For people that do that, they have a little bit of problem. They're like, well, I do that cast, but you know, my line kind of gets wrapped around the tip of my rod. I'm not sure why. And what I'll tell them is they're more than likely, when, as they're doing their back cast, they're stopping, kind of like you would with a traditional line. But whenever you're fishing one fly or multiple flies on a leader like this, you really don't want to come to an abrupt stop. You want to employ a cast that's kind of called the Belgium or the oval cast, where you're almost making a kind of a circular racetrack above your head. That's kind of exaggerating it, but you never want to stop. You just always want to keep them moving in a really fine oval above your head. And by doing that, then you will prevent those line, that tippet, from kind of getting all around your tip top and driving you crazy on the water.
Yeah, yeah. We did get a question here on the internet. Tim K. wrote in and he asked if you're using fluoro carbon leaders.
Some anglers, personally, for my leader, I use monofilament. I use a couple different types. I think that it's called fluo sempe, but it's a monofilament, or I use some nylons as well. But no, I typically use monofilament for my leader, and I use fluorocarbon for my tippet.
Okay. Okay, good. He also said, thank you for the videos you made during the pandemic. They helped to make me a better fly tire and ended up supplying more than just myself with decent flies. So there you go.
Yeah, thanks for the kind words. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, flies. Let's get to flies. DB in Bozeman, Montana says, what meets the definition of a Euro nymph? Wouldn't it be accurate for that answer to be any nymph which is fished in the Euro style? And I know Tom Rosenbauer had something to say about that in your book, so maybe you can talk to that.
Yeah, now I'm curious. Did you write that part in about Tom, or did he write that part in?
No, I wrote that in, yeah.
Okay, I was like, oh, I'm like, that's interesting. I'm like, he might, you know, this guy from Bozeman must have read the book, but I had a feeling it was you. Yeah, and
I just thought it was related.
Good catch, yeah. Roger. You're very good. Your listeners, I hope they all know you are very good with this. He definitely analyzed my book because I asked, you know, I said I asked over 30 anglers for input in this book, and one of them was Tom Rosenbauer. And Tom Rosenbauer, you know, I've had an opportunity to be on his show a couple times. I've had an opportunity to be with him at some of these events, and I've also fished with Tom. And, you know, Euro nymphing is not something you think of when you think of Tom Rosenbauer. But I said to myself, I'd love to have his perspective on this. And I wrote to him, and, you know, he and I communicate, and I said, hey, would you mind writing something about this? And here's what I'm thinking. And he's like, absolutely. And he didn't hesitate. And it was, he had one of the fastest replies that I'd ever seen. And he kind of looked at it as like, what is a Euro nymph? He posed that question himself. To me, if I say, what's a Euro nymph? This would be something like a fly that's tied in the round. So what that means is, if you know, no matter what angle you look at it, it's going to be the same the whole way around. It's meant to replicate a broad spectrum of bugs and fish food. So we're not really tying this to say, oh, this is just going to represent this one specific insect. It can represent just a whole myriad of them. And the biggest difference that I see is that Euro flies, they tend to rely on weight to help them sink to the appropriate depth where the fish are feeding. So with a lot of other flies and fly fishing, you know, we try to help them get to that depth with split shot. But with these Euro nymphs, you know, they're tied quickly. They're tied with minimal materials. They're tied in the round. They're simple flies to tie. They imitate a bunch of stuff. But we can also vary their weight, you know, traditionally with the use of beads. And to me, those are kind of the characteristics of a Euro nymph.
What was Tom's thoughts on this?
Well, Tom basically said, you know, his answer was he just wanted to laugh. He said, quite frankly, I don't know what a Euro nymph is. And he just came out and said, and he's like, I don't know. He's like, it's a fly. He's like, I look at these as flies that catch fish because, and I will say a lot of people, you know, I've had a number of people that reached out to me and they were like, well, I want to buy your book, but I don't have a Euro nymph, you know, rig. How am I supposed to fish these flies? And I'm like, oh, like they're just nymphs, which there's dry flies in here. There's streamers in here. Like, you fish these flies however you're fishing today. You don't have to have a dedicated Euro rig for this stuff. You know, these are just, you fish these interchangeably with your typical nymphs. And I know, you know, you and I were kind of, you know, we were talking prior to the show starting, and you had picked out in a lot of the confidence list that one of the flies that was very similar in a lot of the lists was the pheasant tail. And if I said to people, you know, is the pheasant tail a Euronymph? I mean, most people would say, no, that's the pheasant tail. It's a pretty traditional fly. The versions that these anglers are tying and fishing might be more in that Euronymph style, you know, with a, you know, jig hook or a down-eye nymph hook with a slotted tungsten bead so it can invert. And they're tied with probably, not, I don't want to say fewer materials than Frank Sawyer tied the original, but just they're tied very quickly as well.
Right.
But, you know, these are just interchangeable nymphs. And I don't know. I think the best part of Tom's write-up, you may have noticed this as well, he said something like he uses a plain old hare's ear on a Euro rig. And will that get him kicked out of the cool kids club? And when he said that, he wrote that, I laughed. And I didn't tell him this. And I don't know if he's seen it yet. I sent him a book. In the acknowledgments, you know, I wrote and I was like, Tom, by the way, or maybe I put it in that section, you're still in the cool kids club, don't worry.
Yeah. Jim Wright in Thornton, Colorado asks, why are Euronymphs so effective?
Well, I think it's for those some of those reasons that I just said. I mean, number one, with the weight built into the fly, they get down to the zone where the fish are feeding. So that's for sure
quickly,
number
too.
One.
And quickly because they're,
they get down,
quickly because
they
they're
get
like
down
aerodynamic. Right.
Yeah. When we're talking about pteridogons and some of these flies like the France fly and some of these pheasant tails that are being tied, there's very few materials that are going to, you know, interfere with their descent. So they're getting down to that zone in a hurry, no doubt about it. They're tied to imitate a variety of insects. So when you look at it like that, like these are flies that are getting to where the fish are. They look like fish food and they're being fished. Now let's go back to the whole notion of the rig. They're being fished in a really drag-free or as close to drag-free that these anglers can get in that type of a setup where when you're fishing these on, when you're pairing these with that appropriate rod and leader and tippet, you're getting better drifts. And they look more like something that's edible to these fish. At least that's what we think. I mean, we never know, but there's a reason those fish are eating them. But I'll also caution everyone and say there's also this other aspect to look at that we're able to, when we're fishing these Euro rigs, these light rigs especially, we're seeing more indications of eats. Whenever you're fishing something like a 4.5x leader, you can feel that fish eat. Like, I'm not seeing my sighter. Many of these fish, I'm feeling it the whole way back in my hands because it's transmitting it back that quick. When I have a traditional rig, you don't get that same feedback. So I will also argue with people, I think your typical flies are getting eaten a lot as well. We just aren't seeing any indication of that. Maybe we're fishing indicators that are a little too heavy, and we're just not knowing every time that fish is eating. Versus with these, we're fine-tuning our rigs as well. It's not just the flies. I think we're fine-tuning our techniques, and we're able to, you know, really indicate those eats a little bit more efficiently.
Yeah. You chose 15 flies for your book that you illustrated and, you know, the tying instructions and so forth. How did you decide which ones to include?
Well, I chose 30, first of all. There's 15 with high-vis images with the macro photography. But
it was tough
to just do 15. So with every fly out, there's also a variation. So there's an image and a recipe of a variation. Because I couldn't narrow it to 15. I remember when I wrote my first one, you know, I had a variety of dry flies, nymphs, emergers, streamers. And I just had like the standard flies. And I had some others throughout the place. And I remember Jay Nichols saying, oh, you don't have to worry about variations. Save those for your next book. And I realized I didn't write a fly tying for everyone part two. So this is a Euronymph book. And I thought, well, I don't know if there's going to be a second one of these. I want to get variations in there. But, you know, I started off with a list of around 20 flies. And I said, I think these are going to be the 20 flies that will make up this book. And then I started the interviews. And every interview, I felt like I would say, all right, well Devin really talked about this fly. This one's going to go on my list. So that's fly 21. Then I talked to somebody else and they'd say, oh, this one for sure. That one that was number 21 now just got upgraded. And now that's fly number 10. So that's going to be one of my 15. it went back and forth. And even, I mean, Roger, even at the very end, I was like, oh, maybe I should cut this one. You know, there was a fly that I found out about at the very end. There's a picture of it in the book. And I was like, oh, should I be doing this one in a high viz as well? Like, and even in the worms, if you really look, you know, because you've got to have some worms in these books, there's actually two worm patterns. So if you really are, if you're being very accurate, there's actually 16 flies with the macro photography.
Oh, okay. Stephen Keller in Illinois wrote, he wrote two questions. I'll just combine them.
Yeah.
What's the average size hook you like to use, and are Euronymphs always tied on jig hooks?
Great questions. Well, for me personally, this is, you know, if I'm in Pennsylvania, it tends to be I used to say 14s through 18s. Now it's more 16s through 20s. And that was one of my bigger takeaways from this book, is that a lot of these anglers are using smaller flies, and it's not just anglers that are fishing, you know, tailwaters with smaller insects. I mean, just the majority of these anglers are fishing smaller flies in general, especially paratagons in size 18s and 20s. So I will tell, like, the listeners, you know, whatever size is your average size now, go down one size and just experiment with the beads on those and see how they fish. So that will be part one for Stephen. Yeah. But also kind of know, if I'm in Iceland, it might be sizes 12 through 16. You know, it doesn't mean I'm going down to 20s all the time there. I think he asked about jig hooks. The short answer is no, and not even the short answer. There's a long, long-winded answer, but if I think about my own progression of tying these flies, it started off jig hooks, something like the Honic H400 with a slotted tungsten bead. And, you know, some of the reasons, you know, that maybe it inverts a little bit more in the water. Maybe it's less likely to snag whenever you set the hook. Sometimes you set it in a good spot in the fish's mouth, easier to land. Then what I started seeing happening in fly tying and fly fishing, people were moving to smaller nymphs. And as they got to smaller nymphs, especially in jig hooks, and if you look closely at like a size 18 jig hook, like that standard jig hook, with their down, the way their eye is, with that angle of the eye, and you have your slotted tungsten bead, that down eye on a jig hook takes up a lot of the hook gap, which means it's a little bit tougher to hook a fish with a standard size jig hook in size 18. So what did the fly tying manufacturers do for us? The hook manufacturers helped us out. People like, you know, Honic, they made hooks like the H450, which is a wide gap. So they made it a little bit of a wider gap jig hook, because then it'd be a little bit easier to hook fish. Though some of these anglers also acknowledge that if you have a wide gap, you know, those fish could be a little bit more likely to get off too. So you can look at both sides of this. So people started going in that direction. And then we started seeing jig hooks that were coming out with wide gaps down to size 22 and 24. And I bought them because I had to try them out. And whenever you start fishing those hooks, depending on the company, some of them bent out if you hooked a fish over 16 inches. And that, you don't want that to happen. So, you know, and that was happening to a lot of these competitors as well. They were realizing that these smaller jig hooks, you know, not from some of the reputable companies, but I mean, hooks get expensive. You know, some of these, they were buying, you know, a little bit more, you know, friendly on your pocket hooks, but they were bending out on fish. And that's not a good thing. So a few people started figuring out, if you take a down eye nymph hook and put a slotted tungsten bead on it, or an inverted bead, one of those two, but you can put a slotted tungsten bead on a down eye nymph hook, something like the Honic, we'll say an H230 or a 130BL, that you can lock it in place with resin or thread or a piece of wire, and that bead, the mass of the bead will be above the hook shank, and then you'll have a bigger gap to hook the fish, because the down eye on a size, we'll say an 18 nymph hook, only goes down, I don't know, 20 degrees versus the 45 to 35 degree angle of the jig hook. So that was a big takeaway for me as well, that a lot of these anglers in smaller hook sizes, they aren't using jig hooks. Not everyone, but a lot of them are going with down-eye nymph hooks. And in fact, they're not even going with down-eye nymph hooks. A lot of them are fishing down-eye dry fly hooks, because they're pairing them with those, you know, if you have a heavy hook, a heavy wire nymph hook paired with 7X, it's really easy to snap that off. So they're going now with, you know, these light wire dry fly hooks, and then pairing it accordingly with that light tippet, light leader, light fly rod.
Which brings us to Andrew Flitcroft, who's the editor of Trout and Salmon magazine in Rutland, England. And he said, here in the United Kingdom, many anglers that fish Euro nymphs are turning away from using jig hooks. Instead, many prefer using teardrop-shaped drop beads on standard hooks. Drop beads flip most hooks over to achieve the same point up drift. And fitting on virtually all trout hooks, they also offer the tire a greater choice of hook style, shape, and gauge strength, something that is more limited with jig hooks. Do you have a preference, and why?
Yeah, by the way, Andrew, spot on. It's no surprise that he lives in England. It seems like Europe is always a little bit ahead of us on this, I don't want to call it technology, but just on their thinking. They just seem to be one step ahead all the time. So yeah, basically what I just explained, you're 100%. I'll go back, and I guess I will say, just kind of thinking about the anglers that I interviewed, I asked them about those teardrop-shaped drop beads, and the majority of them said they work really well. They love them, but they're a lot more expensive than a traditional slotted tungsten bead. So when push came to shove, the majority of anglers that I interviewed, if they're going with a down eye, you know, standard hook, just like Andrew's saying, they're acknowledging that those teardrop shaped drop beads work wonderful, but it's just kind of a, you know, looking at how many beads and how many flies they're tying, most of them go with something like a slotted tungsten bead instead, which will still, you know, you can still get the mass of the bead above the hook shank to help invert it. Now, some of these anglers, let's pull out somebody like a pro like Devin Olson. You know, he was the captain of, you know, Fly Fishing Team USA, owner of Tactical Fly Fisher. I mean, just he is someone who just constantly pushes himself to the next level. I asked him that question, basically the same question that Andrew. I was like, all right, what are you fishing, jigs? Are you fishing downine? And he kind of looked at it from the bead perspective. He really looks at it as he will use some of those tungsten-shaped drop beads to fill in gaps in his box. So say he's got flies or hooks with beads that are 2.0, 2.5, 2.8, 3.0, 3.3, 3.5, and he realizes he doesn't have a size between 2 and 2.5, but there is one there with that tungsten drop bead, then he might say, all right, that one's, I'm going to get a 2.3 in that one to achieve my weight in that spot in my fly box.
Jeez.
There's a reason, you know, there's a reason he, if you, the three of us were fishing, I think Devin would probably outfish the two of us together, Roger.
Yeah, there's a reason, all right. Yeah. Oh, God, I think I'll keep it simple still.
Yeah, which I think it's cool to hear this from these anglers because so many of them were like, well, if I'm fishing like, I don't know, a mop fly with a size 12, they're still throwing, you know, jig hooks, a standard jig hook with a slotted tungsten bead on a size 12 because, you know, the hook gap is significant enough on a size 12. They don't need to worry about that gap anymore. So it's cool to know that, you know, there's a reason why they're making these decisions, which something I really want to make sure I say this before, you know, before this interview is over is a lot of the anglers that I interviewed, I don't want to say they disagreed with each other, but they just had different experiences and different perspectives on the approach they took. And it you know, whenever I was, you know, compiling all this stuff and I was putting it together and I started putting their interviews into the book, I realized like, oh, this conflicts with this interview. And, you know, what Devin said on this fly and what Cody Bergdorf said on this fly conflicts with what Lubos Rosa said. Like Lubos said he would never use that fly. And then I thought, well, how do I put this into the book? Do I include everyone's thoughts or just those that, you know, and paint a nice rosy picture? And I said, I have to include everyone because I look at this book as this is where we are right now with Euronymphing. And if Lubos Rosa says, hey, he would never fish a squirmy wormy and here's why, I want that. If I was the reader, I'd want to know, like, why would somebody say don't use it when somebody's saying this is my number one fly? I think it's really, you know, really important to document that as well, just to say, and because these people, they were saying very frankly, I don't, if somebody uses this, I think it's going to ruin your technique. And then the next angler would say, you know, this is my go-to fly in these water types, which I think it's really, you know, important to say, let's look at this and let's analyze why they're saying this. So my book, you know, takes on all those different perspectives.
Jason Stacy in Kentucky says, do you ever add extra weight or only use the bead?
Jason, I only use the bead because it's a little bit easier for me to look down, identify the fly, identify its weight, and go from there. Most of the anglers that I interviewed kind of had the same approach. One of the individuals, Pat Weiss, he's from central Pennsylvania. He's a heck of a talented angler. He would add extra weight on his nymphs, and whenever he did, depending on how many wire wraps, he would change the thread color. So he would know if it was, you know, brown thread at the thorax, that meant there was no extra weight. If it was a couple wraps of red thread, that meant he had four wraps of wire and so on. So he did have a system to document how much weight was underneath. But the majority of them said they'd like to add weight, but it just becomes difficult to identify when you have it. I think the only person who came up with a really good system was Howard Croston. He's from the UK. He was a, you know, world champion. He used a lot of those inverted beads or those drop beads that Andrew was talking about. And what Howard did that I thought was really clever, there's kind of a significant gap on the back of those beads, so he would actually solder in extra weight on those beads. If you look at his box, if people want to see, like, just to what level did these anglers went, like, this is the level that they went. And you can kind of get a peek inside their world, even though you probably see with the macro photography, I'm kind of saying, all right, you don't have to go to that level. Like, here's where you can be, and you can do this. Like, you don't, this isn't, like, something that's out of reach.
Yeah, when you're going to a world championship, all those things make a difference. My father didn't go to a world championship for fly fishing, but he did go to a world championship in, back when it was Hungary, for free flight Wakefield airplanes. These are hand-launched, rubber-powered things. And he made it through all the gauntlets and was chosen for the American team. And these guys that flew these aircraft, I mean, it was the same kind of thing. You know, he would go and he would weigh the balsa wood at the hobby shops to get the right density balsa wood, the lightest but strongest. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. Yeah. When you're at that level, you're at that level for a reason.
Yes, for sure.
Keith in Butler, Pennsylvania says, do you think the number of tailing CDL fibers is important on a fly? I know that the phrase thin to win is stressed.
Yeah. Which, Keith, thanks. I'm not sure if he's listening right now. If you are, Keith texted me this question, and I almost texted him back to say, you're asking the wrong question. The question should be, should you even put tails on your flies? That's a, I think that's the bigger question. When I ask these anglers, I ask all of them the same question. Do tail? Actually, I stopped asking the question because they all gave the same answer. I said, do the tails matter on these nymphs? Everyone said no. I said, well, then do you tie them? And they, every angler said yes. It was confidence. They put tails on for confidence. They don't think it matters. There are a few people that I shared a few patterns that didn't have tails that probably could have, but the person who, you know, the originator said, I don't think it matters. Leave the tail off. So now to answer Keith's question, do I think it matters? Yeah, I think it's important. I think, you know, the more material you add is going to affect the sink rate. I typically stress 4 to 6 fibers. That's kind of the number I go for. Could be CDL, could be mallard, could be partridge, you know, could be something else, another fiber that you put on there. But I think 4 to 6 is kind of the number. I don't get stressed. I'm not going to count it and say, oh, there's 7. I need to take one off. But if it looks a little heavy, I will remove it. But, you know, I like my flies to be consistent when they come off the vise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Mark in Hershey, Pennsylvania, he says, UV resin alternatives. He says, I know Tim Flagger as well as others have had issues with UV fumes. Have you ever tried the plant-based resins or other resins besides the ones sold to fly tires? I have brought random plant-based ones, and some of them have been fantastic with lower fumes, and others have worked poorly and smelled worse. Have you seen or heard of any new resins coming to the local fly shops or suppliers?
Gosh, the short answer is no. The two that I use the most, I use Solaris, the Bone Dry Plus, and then Semperfly makes, you know, UV resin as well. So those are the two that I use the most. I know Tim Flagler, I've heard, you know, I've seen him when he had the reaction. I was at the fly tying symposium when he did have the reaction with UV. I've heard of a few other people that have had it. You know, I don't know the background, what's caused it. I've heard about it. I've never had that reaction. I've been tying with a heck of a lot of it. I'm at my bench right now, and I have 3 different containers in front of me. So I'm in a pretty well fumigated area, you know, an area that has a lot of air movement. I'm in front of a window. You know, in the summertime, that window will open a crack as well just to allow for more air. And I don't use that much of it that it's, you know, I'm constantly breathing it in. But
yeah,
I'm a proponent of whenever I showed this in the book, whenever I use UV, I apply a very minimal amount. Let me stress that. Like for paragons, I want it to just look wet. And I have a stack of Post-it notes. And after I apply it, I even will touch them with the Post-it note to get some of that excess off. I don't want any belly of a resin at all. And then I'll hit it with my torch and I'll rotate my vise because I use full rotary vises. And as I'm doing that, I'll also, you know, I'll cover it with my hand so I don't get any reflection of the UV light into my eyes. And then as soon as I remove my hand, the first thing I do is just kind of blow a little air out of my mouth to just kind of push that air away. Not because I'm afraid of the reaction, but just, you know, because I've heard of this and it's just a natural thing for me to do. But the question is a very legitimate question. I do, you know some representatives with Solaris and at Semperfly, and I'm going to pose that question to them to know if they're experimenting in that direction because I don't know. I don't know. So, Mark, great question, Mark. And if he's heard of anything, please, Mark, shoot me an email. I have a contact form on my website, troutandfeather.com. I'd love to know if he does hear of any moving on, and I'll get back to him if I hear of any as well.
Well, you know, that's being used in a lot of different areas. I mean, they're using it to fill your teeth nowadays, you know, and they're using it. I just used it this past week. I bought this because I thought it needed to be specific, but it was to fill a chip in a granite countertop in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, had a little chip in there, and I bought this kit, and it was the same stuff, basically, but it didn't have any smell to it. So I don't know. There may be different kinds, but But yeah, it's got the stuff's being used all over the place. We're running short on time, but
I'm sorry, Roger. I'm watching the clock. I'm like,
no.
oh, Roger's going to be mad at me. I'm sorry.
No. You provide a lot of great information. What I was going to ask you is, you had organized the flies into five different chapters in your books. Phrygons, nymphs and dubbing, nymphs with dubbing and soft tackle, slow sinkers, streamers, and dry flies. What, maybe you could just kind of rattle off, a fly from each section. Tell us, quickly why it was important to put it in, and by any means have to list them all, but it'll give people a sampling of what's in the book as well.
Yeah, of course. Phrygons. Think of phrygons like things like a pellet. Very aerodynamic, slender, 4 to 6 fibers for the tail. A fly that I kind of point them in the direction of is a thread body. So you have a fly that's tied small, a nice size bead on it, and a thread body. So it's simple as it comes, maybe a little bit of wire for the ribbing. Thread body Phrygon, very easy fly to tie, and they catch a lot of fish. Goes like an olive one. In fact, the one that I share in the book is light olive because whenever it gets wet, it darkens just a little bit. So that's Phrygon. The next section is nymphs with dubbing and soft tackle. And kind of think of it this way. As we start to add stuff to the flies, they sink a little slower than the previous category. So when you have something with dubbing in the thorax or a fully dubbed body like a hare's ear or a waltz worm, or you have a soft tackle like a CDC around like a blowtorch, that's going to sink slower than a Phrygon. What fly would I tell you to check out in that one? I would say the France fly. In fact, if you Google on YouTube, type in France fly. I just released a video on a France fly about a week ago, just I think on Sunday actually. So I released the video of a fly from my book. France fly is kind of like a poor man's Phrygon. Same, CDL, Coque de Lion tail, but instead of a thread body, we use microtubing. But you stretch it really tight. So you can make it very, very slender, put a very tightly dubbed thorax behind the bead, you're good to go. So that would hit the second category. With slow sinkers, gosh, this is like, we call this kind of like the junk fly category. These are flies like worms, mop flies, eggs, that type of stuff. The one that I guess I'll mention in the book, just because I think this is cool, the current worms that are being used are not squirmy wormies. They're more like a chenille worm because a lot of these competitions actually ban squirmy wormies. They're too effective, which I thought was just, that's hysterical. You have a fly that's catching too many fish, so they ban it. So people went down the chenille worm path. However, I still think the squirmy wormy provides a lot of value. I catch a lot of fish on it, stock and wild. And I went out and I interviewed David Heise. He's actually the individual who created the squirmy wormy. And I told a little interview with him, and he was at a store with his daughter, I believe, and they were getting ready to check out. He walked past these balls that had all these legs on them, like octopus. And he was like, "What is that? That's kind of cool for fly tying." But he put it down, and he got to the checkout, and he's like, "You know what? I better go back and buy one of those." And he did, and then the squirmy wormy came to be. But what I thought was interesting was the first one that he tied, and his original one actually was glow in the dark. So I found some of that, and you hit it with the same UV torch that you use with resin, and it glows in the dark. So the picture of one in the book, that's the original one. He tied that one, which he still ties in the same way he tied, of day one. So for people who like to fish worms like me, you get a little history in there as well.
Yeah.
Let's see, do we have time for one or two more?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, streamers. What?
Streamers. I mean, the streamers, whenever I talk to most anglers for this book, they basically said, we're fishing some version of a woolly bugger still to this day. The one version that I share that I'll be tying at all the fly fishing shows this year is a black jig bugger. It's actually on the cover, so you can see it on the cover. I put it there because I think it's just a very important fly. What's interesting about this, you have this streamer that's tied on a jig hook, kind of a smaller streamer. It's like a size 12 or a size 14 jig hook. You pair it with a slotted tungsten bead. Silver was kind of an all-around color. And then they were using material that was a black material that had, UV in it as well, but it was longer. So it kind of gave the appearance of hackle, it gave that appearance of hackle. So you actually palmer it as you tied that in. But the most important part of that fly that I recommend people check out is the tail, because this is one that really caused a lot of back and forth with those I interviewed. How long should the tail be on this jig streamer? Because some people want a really long tail. And a lot of these anglers, I'm telling you, Roger, they were telling me the dimensions, and I was like, there's no way you fish a tail that long. And they would hold up their fly box and pull out the flies, and they're like, look at this. And I'm like, how does the fish eat it? The tail's like, you know, 3.5 inches long on a size 12 hook. And they're like, Tim, you get so much movement, those fish can't resist it. So you had some anglers that were saying they use these tails that are excessively long. And then you had other anglers, like Pat Weiss, saying he wants the tail as short as he can, but he would just put like 5 marabou clumps in it. He would just pack a bunch into it just so he would have it built up, but he wanted it short so he wouldn't miss any fish strikes. So to me, it was just really fascinating to see, you know, the different lengths of the tails and why they chose that length of tail. And then for the last one, the dry fly, oh gosh, there's so many good ones that I can mention. I'll share one that's the one that really didn't get a place in my book that I think belongs. And there's an image in the book of a fly called the popsicle. And if you Google the popsicle fly, there's a fly that's tied by my friend Josh Miller. I think I've mentioned Josh like 3 times tonight. He owes me $20. And he ties this fly called the popsicle. And this is like, I'm telling you, Roger, this is a nothing fly. It's got like a little tail, just a quickly dubbed body, super fine dubbing, use, you know, Semperfly, K-Pock, something just easy. And then he basically uses like an Antron or Zelon, that type of material for the entire wing. He just ties in like multiple clumps of that stuff. And that's the stuff that he chose, you know, it's very tough to find on the fly tying market. And maybe we can say, like, anyone who, if you email me, I'll tell you what the stuff is. That will be like your, if you really want to know what it is, because Josh never released what it was. There's a whole story that we don't have time to tell. But if you send me a message, you beg me, I'll tell you what that stuff is. But what's neat about that fly is with the material that he used for its wing, it suspends really heavy nymphs underneath. And the dry flies that I chose for this, you know, some of the categories, they had to catch fish and they had to also suspend nymphs. But what was interesting about, you know, the dry flies in this dry dropper section, these top anglers, these, you know, the highly competitive anglers, they were selecting dry flies that would literally just suspend the nymph. They almost looked like they were drowning dry flies because they wanted, the moment a fish touched that nymph underwater, they wanted that dry fly to react. And in some cases, it would go down. In some cases, they would just see ripples moving away from the fly, or the fly would just turn 90 degrees, and that would indicate an eat. So they really wanted these dry flies to just almost look like they were struggling to suspend the nymph so they would indicate any movement subsurface.
One last question, and we'll call it a night. Chuck in Placerville, California says, thousands of fly patterns over the years and hundreds of new ones are added every year in the fly fishing industry. Euronymphing has put more emphasis on weight versus fly design, displayed by the waltz worm, a hook, a bead, and a body of hares ear is very effective pattern. What is the future of fly design in regards to euronymphing?
Wow, Chuck, I wish I knew. If I knew, I would be ahead of the curve. I can tell Chuck what I think is interesting and really neat about fly design. A lot of these anglers, when I kind of pushed them, like, why are fish eating these flies? And a lot of them said to me, just straight up, they're like, Tim, I don't think they're eating them because of anything we're adding. I think it's the bead. And some of the anglers that I interviewed said, and I think I put their names in the book who did this as well, that they fished just nothing more than a hook, a bead, and a little, you know, a few thread wraps behind it to lock it in place. And every time they did, they would do it once. I think Ollie Bassett from New Zealand, he did this. And I remember him saying, like, he did it once over a fish that he thought he would have no business catching. And he caught, like, a massive rainbow. And he was like, oh, my gosh. It was, like, quick. So he's like, that had to have been a one-off. And he made, like, 3 more casts and caught, like, another fish. And he was like, oh, my gosh. And I think he took it off, like, knowing, like, here we are. He's like, fly tires, fly fishers. We put all this thought into the right fly and, you know, the right, you know, we're counting the tail fibers. And here he is just throwing nothing but a bead and catching fish. And it's like, I'm not going to tell, you know, Chuck, that's the future of euronymphing. I sure hope it's not. But
I kind of take the fun out of it, huh?
Yeah. No, but I think if Chuck is kind of, you know, Chuck, to answer your question, if we're really thinking what's the future, for me tying, and I've tied flies now for 35 years, I know, like, I really started with a lot of natural fibers, and then I moved towards some synthetics, and now I have a blend of both naturals and synthetics. And I think maybe, at least in my opinion, I think as our developing process and our manufacturing processes get better, we're going to get more and more synthetics that we can buy right off the shelf that are all going to look, you know, identical. Every package is going to be like the other one, and they're going to do their best to imitate and mimic natural materials. It's not there yet with, like, hackle and deer hair, but it keeps getting closer and closer. So I could see, I don't want to say in euronymphing, but just in fly tying in general, I think that we're really going to be pushing the limits of our synthetic materials.
Okay. Well, good. Well, we're out of time. We're way past out of time, but it was such a great conversation, Tim. But hang on, we're not done yet.
No,
We got to
no.
wrap it up, but we're going to give away a few things: a 1-year membership to Fly Fishers International, a 1-year membership to Trout Unlimited, and a copy of your book, Tim's latest book, Tying Euro Nymphs and Other Competition Favorites, courtesy of Stackpole Books. So hang tight, folks, and we'll do that in just a minute. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section of tonight's show that says, "What'd you think of the show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. We really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away the prizes. Winners for our drawings are randomly selected from a show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on a chance to win one of these great prizes. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show and collect your information so we can deliver your prize to you. So first, we'll be giving away a 1-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org, flyfishersinternational.org. And our winner for that is Charles Card in Utah, Charles Card in Utah. So congratulations, Charles. Hope you enjoy
Thanks.
your membership, and I'm sure you will. And then 1-year membership to Trout Unlimited. To learn more about Trout Unlimited, go to tu.org. Again, another great organization to support. If you don't win tonight, go join. And our winner for that is Richard Rhodes in South Carolina. Richard Rhodes. So congratulations, gentlemen, and I know you'll enjoy your membership. So now we'll give away a copy of Tim's latest book, Tying Euro Nymphs and Other Competition Favorites, courtesy of Stackpole Books. And my distributor, we do have it on our homepage. There's a link to our
Ooh.
site, and I think my distributor is still giving us copies. So you guys, if you really want that right away, you might try that and see if there's still inventory left.
Yes,
So,
you have them on your site?
on the homepage of our
Awesome.
site. Yeah. So,
Yes, go and buy them from Roger. Great.
yeah, so check it out. But if you want it autographed, of course, go to Tim and get it at his site. Okay, so here it is. And we've got a lot of folks online tonight, I think. We're getting compliments already, Tim. So here it is. The question is, give me three characteristics of a Euro nymph fly. Three characteristics.
Ooh, good question.
I don't even know if I know the answer, Tim. So
I'm not sure if I do either. Of course, this is great. For all the listeners out there, Roger's always like, "Hey, I'm going to ask a question. You can verify the answer." I'm like, "Well, I better know the answer." And of course, he picked the tough one.
Well, I've had it happen twice in the past, what do you say, 18 years, where my
Yeah.
guest answered the question. And I said, no, you can't answer the question.
You
I know
don't
you
say
know
the answer.
the
You've been asking
answer.
questions all night. We're just used to it. We're like, all
Yeah.
right, I better take this one.
Okay, I'll give you the first one here. Sinks fast, slim, and beaded. I'll
Let's
give you
say it
another
again.
one.
Sinks. Go ahead. Give me another one. I like it. I don't love it, but I like it.
Okay, tied in the round, looks buggy, vary the weight.
Okay, now
I
this is
can keep
Roger. I'm gonna
going
let you pick
here.
this. I have to let you pick this because here's what I did say. I started off with tied in the round. I think that was important. That
That's
was important.
important, yeah.
We said that they imitate a broad spectrum of bugs and fish food, and then we did say they rely on weight to sink to the appropriate depth where the fish are feeding. So I didn't say
Okay,
they got, so,
I
see,
think
if
the
I'm
next
being a
one is the
nitpicker, I'm
winner
going
then.
number two. Yeah, I'm going number
Well,
two.
here's the next one. Tied in the round, general appearance of food, relies on its own weight to quickly get and stay near the fish to have better drifts.
I think that's awesome. I think that's wonderful.
Phil McCartney in Kentucky, you just won, so I know he'll be happy. Phil's been listening to my
Congratulations.
show since day one, and
Oh my gosh.
I think he just said what you just said, so I've got to give it to him.
I think
Right?
so.
I
These
mean,
other people are like, of course, the night they went in for the drawing, they have the teacher on the other end of the line. Sorry, guys. Sorry.
yeah. Do I give this an A or an A plus?
I
Or
know.
I don't know how
I
you
threw
guys
out
grade.
grades.
Yeah. Anyway, congratulations, Phil.
Yeah,
Send me your
congrats, Phil.
address again, and we'll get Stackpole to send that book. I know you'll have a blast with this book, Phil. So enjoy. Okay, where are we at? Hey, Tim, just thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Again, your wealth of information, pleasure to talk to. Everybody, if you're at the shows, go see Tim. He's going to be on that fly tying row over there. And always.
I won't be on the row. I'll be walking around. No, I won't be on the row
oh,
this time.
Oh, you won't? Oh, okay, okay.
No,
are you doing
they
any
gave me
demos
too many.
or anything?
They gave me. I have a full schedule of presentations at every show. So if they see me, I'll be running from one demo to another. I have back to back all day long every
oh,
show.
Okay,
I'm at.
okay. So
it's
you'll be
cool.
on the. Yeah.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
They can find
yeah.
me. They can find me somewhere.
All righty. Sounds good. Well, thanks again for being on the show tonight, and I always appreciate it. Hopefully you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line of our menu. You'll find over 400 shows there now. You can search by any kind of keyword and come up with something I think you'll enjoy. Our next broadcast will be February 5th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, and I'll be interviewing Landon Mayer, and we're going to be talking about tying guide flies and other favorites. Colorado professional guide Landon Mayer is well known in the Rockies for putting his clients into incredible trophy trout. Landon shares his tying steps and fishing and rigging tips for several of his signature guide flies for trout and bass. These nymphs, dry flies, and streamers have proven to be effective around the world. Join us and get the lowdown on why these flies work and how you can use them to catch more fish. And by the way, we had Landon scheduled for earlier in the month. He had a bad accident and damaged his back. I'm sure we'll hear more about this. So we had to push that back, but he's doing okay and recovering now, and really sad to hear, you know, about his injury. So just wanted to let people know why we had to postpone that. So add that show to your calendar. There's a link right under his picture on the homepage. Click on that link, add it to your calendar so you don't miss that show. I'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, OPST, Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.